It pleases the court. My name is Ed Stout. I'm from Bristol, Virginia. I represent the Bristol, Virginia Department of Social Services. I have a poplar tree in my yard.
You get taken down cheap.
Feel pretty good about that now. This is, all these cases are unique to their facts, and this is certainly unique. What we have here is a household prior to 2010 that was in, the judge's words, constant crisis. Domestic violence, so much so that the department offered services. They put in day counseling, day treatment, homemaker services, counseling for the children. And there were five children in the home. Two of those children were severely injured. I would invite the court to look at the pictures of those injuries.
We're not the trier of fact in the case. And it looks to me like of the two prongs that the DSS has to prove in this case for termination, one being that the requisite statutory requirements have been met by clear and convincing evidence, the other being the best interest of the child by clear and convincing evidence. It looks to me like the trial court found that you had not established by clear and convincing evidence that it would be in the best interest of the child to terminate parental rights.
That's what the case really comes down
so
to.
So we start with the strong, very strong constitutional presumption that the best interest of the child is to be raised by his or her biological parent. And we get that, I think, from the U.S. Supreme Court. You have introduced evidence that the trial court said had not overcome that presumption, in effect. How can we then decide that, as a matter of law, the trial court was wrong?
You need to look at what the trial court did. There were three children in that household that were at issue in these cases. The oldest child was Bryson, who was 7. Then there was Brooklyn, who was 2. Those two children had been dealt with in a prior appeal. Those two children were raised by their mother. Those two children had substantial problems. The court found it was in their best interest to never see this mother again.
And that was as to the two older children who had special needs.
That's correct.
And when considering best interests of the child, a special needs child is going to have some other considerations that would apply.
But the court made no distinction or offered or took no evidence as to Maggie Welch's ability or inability to parent special needs child. But what we do know is that she had a bond with these children, and the court felt it was in their best interest never to see the children again. On the other hand, you have CJ, who's the subject of this appeal, who was 5 months old at the time of the removal, who wouldn't know his mother if he saw her. And the court said that it was not in his best interest for his rights to be terminated. The court cited the preservation of the family unit as one of its reasonings. There is no family unit at this time. Father's rights have been terminated. The older siblings' rights are terminated. CJ has no knowledge of his mother. Our position is it strains the credibility of the court to take that position on the preservation of the family unit. And the court distinguishes, and we believe improperly so, the CJ as opposed to the special needs child.
The preservation of the family unit element, I'm not sure it is an element, that's what I think my question goes to. There has to be evidence that other evidence of the best, put it this way, other evidence that to retain the child in the home is in the child's best interest aside from the principal, which I think we all would agree with, that the family unit should be preserved. I don't think there's any quarrel about that. But I thought the court had indicated other issues upon which it relied in not terminating this child's, the parent's rights to this child. It wasn't just the preservation of the family unit.
He did say that he saw no evidence that she abused or neglected these children,
and that he seemed to rely heavily on the mother's desire to retain her relationship as mother to the child. Didn't the court say that as well?
Well, I mean, she had the same desire with the other children as well, and this court has rejected that. That's the distinction, and we...
I think he said she was sincere.
He did. He did say that.
Wasn't it after the termination of the parental rights for the two older children, though, that the mother had gone through during her time of incarceration, had taken some courses, and had served as a mentor for other persons, and had those things going for her when the judge made the decision as regards, you're calling him CJ, I have CW, it's all the same, I suppose.
It is.
Okay.
That is true. The judge did reference that.
So why wouldn't that be enough?
Well, we contend that it was the delay that led the court to be in that position. I mean, this should have happened.
Yes, but isn't that just a prima facie case that can be rebutted, so to speak?
I think it is, but there's no reason. For example, at the first hearing, we objected to the delay in CJ's ruling. And the court said it was important to wait on, it was in everyone's best interest to wait on the Court of Appeals decision. That decision came down, the court did nothing.
So you're talking about that delay.
That delay.
I put you in the statutory time period in which the mother hadn't really...
Well, I mean, those delays are hand in hand with the other.
But those delays, aren't they... I mean, you've raised the issue that the court improperly delayed disposition. The court has finally disposed of the matter. Isn't that delay issue now moot?
Well, CJ still doesn't have permanency in his life.
But as far as did the trial court err in failing to make its decision within the statutorily prescribed time? He's made the decision. So what could we possibly do? What remedy could you receive if we agreed with you?
Well, I think to hold that the termination was improper.
I understand that, but your argument that the termination was done in an untimely manner, if we agreed with you, all we can do is admonish the judge.
Is that any time a court wanted to do this, he could merely frame best interest of the child, delay, and the departments would have no remedy. I think those time frames are there for a purpose. Moreover, and it hasn't been argued in this case, but I think under 283E2, the termination of other children is relevant. The legislature has seen that is relevant.
But you still, even if you find that other children's rights or the mother's interest to the other children's rights has been terminated under that statute, you still have to find that it's in the best interest of this child. It's a two-pronged test.
I understand.
And I have looked, but I can't find a single case in which we have held that a trial court erred by finding that it was not in the best interest of the child to terminate parental rights.
Our position is this is that case.
So your argument is that this case is so compelling that no reasonable jurist could possibly come to the conclusion that it was in the best interest of the child for him to remain with the mother.
That's our position. And I would refer to the Appendix 239, we've cited it in the brief, where their belief was, the CASA report hopes that he was removed from this volatile environment early enough that he was not exposed to the indelible trauma that Brooklyn and Bryson endured. We think that's extremely relevant to our position. We would ask.
But what if you put on the evidence that this significant trauma existed, and it's of course your burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence that was true. What if the trial judge just said, "I don't believe it"? I mean, in making its decision, the trial court rejected your testimony. Where does that leave you?
Well, I think the trial court has to have reasoning. His reasoning can't strain the credibility of the court.
The trial court doesn't have to announce any reason, though. He just, in his mind, says, I don't think that's true. Just like he rejects the testimony of any other witness in a case.
I believe in this case that his reasoning is does strain the credibility. It's, in my opinion, clearly erroneous, and I would ask the court so to find.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Smith. You're about halfway into your total 20 minutes, so you've got about 5 minutes if you want to reserve the remaining five.
Thank you, Judge Petty. Patricia Smith, guardian ad litem for the child. If I could just pick up where you left off, Judge, I truly believe that if you look back at that May 2012 decision, you'll see the only evidence that's relevant to termination of parental rights on these three children was given that day. From May 2012 until December of 2013, the court relied on that very same evidence and had no basis upon which to segregate CJ, CW, he's called both, from the other children. It is true that this court has, in other cases that are cited in the briefs, looked at special needs children differently from healthy children. But I would ask that you consider the fact that in each of those cases, the court has tied the mother's ability to parent or not parent those special needs children in segregating those children away from each other. That was not done in this case. There has been no evidence that Maggie Welch can parent this child.
But you're asking us to, this is, you know, the kind of issue that I'm having with this case. You're asking us basically to substitute our judgment for that of the trial court.
I'm asking you to find that the trial court absolutely ignored and violated my ward's rights under the statute to achieve permanency. The 12 months or up to 12 months that the mother was given is not rock solid. Again, you can see the cases.
But again, let me come back to what I asked earlier. Isn't that moot now that a decision has been made?
Absolutely not. As a frequent guardian ad litem, that is beyond moot. That is one of the most important things this court can do.
What remedy could we give you? Could we remand it back and say, go back into a time machine and decide the case within the 12 months?
Absolutely not. But what the judges in circuit courts need to understand is you cannot hold back a decision on termination of
parental rights. You have a statutory remedy there. There's a statute that says if a trial court unreasonably delays issuing a decision, you can file a complaint with the Chief Justice of the Virginia Supreme Court, and you can deal with that judge and his or her procrastination. But you can't unring this bell here.
And I clearly did not take that action. However, but we can unring this bell by terminating, by you all reversing the trial court's decision and letting this child move on to permanency. What if we don't? What if we hold it where it is? Then we have to take this child who has developed in a healthy manner and potentially, not with great certainty, but potentially return him to a woman whose only experience in parenting has resulted in termination of her rights to two children and several findings of abuse neglect.
Well, since the May 20, 2012 hearing that you mentioned was the sole evidence on her ability to parent, wasn't that hearing before she received the completion certificate for the parenting course that she took while in prison?
Yes, and she had ample opportunity to show that she learned something from that class, and she failed to do so. In her own brief, she asks the question, what meaningful contact could a mother have with a five-month-old other than in-person contact? That proves she didn't get what she learned in the class. She doesn't understand that keeping up with that child, asking, has he learned to crawl? Is he developing normally?
You're asking us, again, to weigh the evidence, to read this record and determine the credibility of these witnesses, to do all of the things that we historically allow the trial court to resolve.
I am asking you to find that the judge got that wrong. I am asking you to find that he abused his discretion, that he failed to apply the evidence equally to this child. And I think I need to stop talking if I want rebuttal.
You've got about 5.5 minutes left for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Mike Bishop. I'm from Abingdon, Virginia. I represent Maggie Welch, the mother in this case. It's our position that there was evidence to support the court's decision. It was not plainly wrong, and the court found correctly that the department had not proven that it was in the child's best interest to terminate the mother's parental rights.
Was the only definition of the child's best interest the need to preserve the family relationship?
No, Your Honor. I think what, in the court's opinion...
Could that ever be the only consideration?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. I think you would have to show some positive, particularly when the department's evidence shows negative parental behavior. I think you would have to show some positive parental behavior.
How strong does it have to be? Is the fact that she completed a parenting course enough?
I don't know, Your Honor. The court found that there was enough, and it wasn't just completing a parenting class. It was becoming a mentor. It was completing her sentence, being in a halfway house, working, having adequate financial situation to support the child and herself.
How does the issue of permanency get evaluated at the trial level? What is that all about, from your perspective?
From our perspective, the issue of permanency is very, very important, but it's not the end-all, be-all. This child was placed in foster care. The child was not in a permanent situation at any point. It's our position that based upon the court's ruling as of December 2013, the court did provide for permanency, and that permanency was with its mother.
Did the trial court actually do anything that affected the custody of the child? The court denied termination of parental rights, but you still have a pending petition out. I assume the goal now goes to return to mother at some point, but does the child remain in foster care?
Yes, Your Honor. And we have had a hearing. It was remanded back to J&DR court. We have had a hearing, and all matters concerning custody at this point in time are on hold pending this court's decision.
So is in this intervening period where the child is still in foster care, does the mother continue to keep working on improving the relationship? Isn't
yes, Your Honor.
What is anticipated?
Yes, Your Honor.
It doesn't necessarily happen.
There have been efforts.
In this case, I mean generally.
I would think so. I would think there are services available through the department while they have custody bring about a resumption of the relationship.
So it sounds as though you could imply, and I've seen other cases of this sort, not many, that the court basically felt there was enough evidence presented to give the mother a continuing opportunity to work on the family relationship.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that it would be in the best interest of the child to do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, at least, just to follow up on that, because I think it's important for everybody to remember, there's no burden on the mother to prove anything in this case, is there?
No, Your Honor.
The mother can stand on her Troxel presumption of being the parent best capable of raising her child.
That is
so
correct.
So we're talking,
Judge,
about did the Department of Social Services carry its burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence that presumption no longer applies?
You are correct, Your Honor. The mother did not have to put forward any evidence. However, she did.
Were you able to find any cases where we have reversed a trial court for refusing to find it was in the best interest of the child to terminate parental rights?
No, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
We believe that the trial court was correct and that this court has not reversed a case wherein the situation was that the court found that the department had failed to meet its burden. We would ask that you affirm the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you've got your full 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to start, if I could, with Judge Annunziata's question about isn't the expectation that the mother would continue to improve her situation?
Isn't that the underlying expectation?
It absolutely is. And that's the important part of applying the statute that applies to termination, is that the mother continues to try to improve herself. And in that improvement, there has to be some evidence that it's applying to the child. This is a woman who never made any contact to ask even one time, how is my child doing? Is he meeting his developmental needs?
You say that, but the court seems to have rejected that
argument. The court ignored it, Your Honor, with all due respect.
What's the difference? But when you have the burden of proof, tell me the difference between ignored and rejected.
I will, Your Honor. In May of 2012, the court found clearly that the mother had not kept in contact with all three of her children. The court found that she had failed to remedy the situation for all three of her children, and then in applying that same evidence, did this arbitrary separation of them because the child was 5 months old. And since that time, the court's not heard or given any reason to suggest that this mother can parent this child. In every case, let me slow down. Judge, you asked, have we found a case? I looked long and hard and didn't find one either, where this court has overturned a court by not agreeing to terminate. This has to be that case for two reasons. One, the statute with the 12-month deadline gets so dragged out, even just by our natural appeal process. And when a judge just sits on it for no reason, if the court would look at why he sat on this decision, it wasn't because there was a bond between the mother and the child. It wasn't because the child needed his mother. It was because, well, let's see what mother gets sentenced to. And then the next time that I made a motion to go back and get an order, well, it's in everyone's best interest to see what the Court of Appeals does on the other two children. None of that related to the best interests of my ward. None of it did. And the court has failed to protect his best interests. The court has completely ignored the fact that this child is entitled to some permanency. I will say again that in the cases that we have all cited in our briefs, each one of them is distinguished from this particular case because the judge failed to look at any evidence, because there was none, that the mother had a relationship with this child, that the mother could parent this child.
But I say again, you're flipping the burden of proof. The mother doesn't have to prove anything in this case. The burden is upon you.
And the burden was met, and the judge was wrong. And he just arbitrarily made this decision and did not tie it to anything meaningful to the child.
I want to get back to the burden of proof or the burden of presentation of evidence. The 12-month, all the statutory periods are there to establish a prima facie case, are they not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Including the 12-month, is it not? I'm not looking right at the statute.
No, you're correct.
And all that means, as I understand the definition of prima facie case, it means if that's all you prove, then that is, it sets up a requirement of the opposing party to put on evidence so that the prima facie case doesn't become conclusive. Isn't that the way normal prima facie cases are dealt with?
Yes.
So in the case of the mother, I'm not sure I can totally agree that she has no responsibility to prove anything. She doesn't have to prove it in the sense of meeting a burden of proof. But it's like any other prima facie case. If she doesn't come forward with some evidence to address the prima facie case, doesn't the prima facie case say this must file, albeit for one more condition, it's in the best interest of the child, always?
I agree with you.
So I don't, you know, I always have seen that statutory period as exactly as I said. You prove that much, it's over if the court can then consider it's in the prime, is it not? Am I wrong on that?
No, and I believe all the cases that we've cited in our brief support that. If this judge had had...
Okay, now the mother then did apparently put forward some proof, right? She had completed a parenting course. She had monitored people in the prison. She was in prison, I think, not jail. Right?
She was in federal custody.
Yes, federal custody. She put on some evidence. Now, the question is, here's where it becomes troublesome. Maybe if I were the trial judge, I didn't think that I wanted to get that anyway. Possibly. We're not the trial judge. The trial judge gave it a lot of weight and said that he thought given everything else he knew, it was in the best interest of the child not to terminate. But the issue of weight, I don't think we can usurp as, I don't think we can take that responsibility.
And I won't ask you to go that far. I'll ask you to go back to that May 2012 prima facie case that was proven. And on that date and at that time, the mother had presented no evidence of a relationship with the child.
I understand on that issue. But because the court delayed, and unless you can suggest that the trial judge can't delay that decision as a matter of law, I don't know that I've seen that yet.
I will suggest to you that case law supports the judge continuing that when there is already a relationship between the mother and child.
What if the judge just thinks there is even just a scintilla of evidence that a relationship can be developed, giving the parents just another few months?
Then with due respect, he needs to look at what makes up best interest. It isn't about developing a relationship. It's what is the relationship between the parent and child at this time? What has been the relationship between the parent and child? What has this parent done to contribute to the upbringing of the child? The age of the child, the mental condition of the child, mother's own choice to commit crimes instead of working toward getting her child back. Those are the considerations that the court needed to
make. In essence, you're saying that the evidence is best, can't say it's non-existent, but you're saying that with respect to when you try to relate it to the child, it just isn't there.
It isn't there. If it is there, it's insufficient. No contact.
It's not enough to go to school for a couple of parenting classes and to mentor other prisoners.
No. How does mentoring another prisoner translate into an ability, a present ability to parent a child? You can check a box off and say, I went to 3 parenting classes, but unless you can employ that knowledge, such as asking about your child and saying to the Department of Social Services, I've taken this class and I learned X or Y. How is CJ doing with crawling, walking? Is he showing any signs?
You want to bring it to closure here. Your time's expired.
I would just ask you all to please, on behalf of my ward, find that the trial judge was clearly wrong in this case and denied him the protections that the statutes allow him.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will greet counsel.